when the attacks happened on September 11th in New York, I was in Washington, D.C., working right by the Pentagon. And as we were evacuating, what we needed to do was start drawing up plans for port security, because then that became the focus.
Welcome to the PreparedX podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
That was a short clip from my interview with Molly McPherson, and for episode 60 of the PreparedX podcast. I got talking to Molly about lots of different subjects with regards to crisis communications. Molly is an experienced public relations speaker, manager, if you will. She's been involved in crisis management and crisis communications for many years. And again, this interview with Molly was a very good one. Hope you enjoy it. Episode 60. Well, good morning, Molly. How are you today?
I'm great, Rob. How are you? I'm so happy to join you on your podcast.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, are you in New Hampshire, Maine today? Whereabouts are you?
Today I am in my office in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Okay, great. That's great. I know you travel fairly extensively, and we appreciated you getting down to the International Crisis Management Conference, and that was the first time that we had actually met, but I know we've been speaking for a little while, so we appreciate you making the conference a few weeks back.
And what a great conference it was. I enjoyed it, meeting the people and hearing the other talks, but also sitting with the participants and finding out what their challenges are and what they were looking for, like what brought them to that conference. So it was very helpful for me to hear what they had to say. And I know it was a great conference. Congratulations.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So our PreparedX listeners here on all the various podcast outlets, as well as through our website, we have all different types of preparedness professionals, people looking to get into the business, businesses looking to expand their knowledge and expertise. So obviously with your experience within the world of crisis communication, I think you're going to add a lot of value today. So if you don't mind, if you could just start off and give our listeners a little background of Molly.
Sure. Yeah. My background is somewhat of a varied one, but it all stayed in the same place. And that's a background in communications and journalism. I started out wanting to be a journalist, and I went to graduate school in Boston at Boston University, the comm program there, which is an excellent communications program. And through marriage, I became a military spouse, which meant I needed to follow the path of a military spouse. So I had a lot of, we would transfer from Washington, D.C. and back up to Boston. And with those moves came new jobs and opportunities. And I quickly shifted over to public affairs. And my first public affairs job, where I was really dealing in the world of crisis management, crisis communication, was as the director of communications for the cruise line industry. It's now known as CLIA. Back then, it was the International Council of Cruise Lines. And it was doing managing the communications for all the cruise lines at an association. But the two big crises that I dealt with then were the Norwalk virus. It was the first time that cruise ships were hit with the virus, and we weren't really prepared for a virus to hit not only on the cruise ships but also in the press.
Yep.
And then the second piece was 9/11. And dealing with port security. So sure. when the attacks happened on September 11th in New York, I was in Washington, D.C., working right by the Pentagon. And as we were evacuating, what we needed to do was start drawing up plans for port security, because then that became the focus. And after that job, I worked at FEMA at headquarters in the Office of Public Affairs there in the External Affairs Office. And that was a lot of post-Hurricane Katrina work. So that was more of the reputational angle of crisis management. How do you bring an agency that is thought of as one of the most backward, screwed up agencies at the time because of, you know, because of just the onslaught of bad press from Hurricane Katrina, from the response, and how can we bring it back up into the eyes of the public that it is a good organization, which
sure.
it is.
Sure. Well, that's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And now.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And I should say, and that has led me to the role, like many people in crisis management or many people in work, as a consultant. And I have found that, you know, a crisis may change in time, but there's always a need for crisis preparation. So that's, I do a lot of work in crisis communications now.
Great. Well, I think that's a great segue into, you know, my first question, really, which is really about some of the core concepts of crisis communications and crisis communication rules. What are your top three rules and why?
If you were to ask me this question 15 years ago, it would be somewhat different than what it is today, because I think in the environment that we're in now, a lot of leaders of organizations, there's a fear factor that's happening because communication has changed so dramatically in the last few years with online media. So when I speak about crisis preparedness, it's always being mindful of that technology piece. So my first step would be to be prepared for anything. Preparation is key. Winging it is never an option. And 20 years ago, I remember leaders would have no problem winging it. They would come in with all this confidence and bravado, and we've got this, we can handle it. And maybe you could get away with it 20 years ago, but nowadays you can't. So being prepared, you know, because if you're not prepared, at best, you and your organization will look unprepared, but at worst, it can cause serious reputational damage
sure.
if there's any type of wrong messaging or wrong preparedness. And the second, and this is key, and a lot of people struggle on this one, is to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the public, I feel now, we're firmly rooted in a culture where people will call you out, and they will call out anyone that doesn't seem genuine, or they're hiding, or they're not being completely honest with the truth or forthcoming. The public can smell hedging a mile away. So that truth piece, again, if you want to keep information to yourself, you may be able to keep it to yourself, but that doesn't mean that that information isn't going to be found out by the public.
Sure.
And then the third piece, which I think now speaks to the age that we're in, is switching or understanding that you need to be in a 21st century mindset. And what I mean by that is technology is here for organizations, for companies, but also the public. So even if you may not use it, maybe if you don't think you need to spend a lot of time on Twitter or social media, the public and the press, they are on it. So any type of crisis response you have should have a multimedia, multi-tiered approach. You know, there should be a component where you're letting your publics know what you're doing, and you need to do that in traditional forums, newspaper, radio, terrestrial radio, but also online and digital forums as well. Know who your key publics are is very important in crisis management,
sure.
but knowing where they get their information is even more important.
Great. Well, that's a great start to the interview here. So I want to move on with regards to the crisis communication plan. For the audience here, are there any key elements, you know, things that should be in that plan that shouldn't be missed? What are those key elements to the crisis comms plan?
I guess I would focus on the key element that I see that is often missed. And when people create a plan, they think they start with the plan, and then they implement the plan, and then they see how the plan works. The key that is missed is the research part of the plan. You have to know exactly why you're implementing or why you're planning that plan. So what type of research are you going to do? Is it going to be, you know, formal or informal? Is it going to be qualitative or quantitative? Are you going to have scientific methods? Whatever it is, if it's a focus group, is it a poll? Is it hiring someone to find out what is happening there and what we are planning for? I think without that piece, the first piece, you cannot have a solid plan built on any type of foundational strength if you don't know what you're planning for. So I would say that research piece is really the key component.
Sure. Yeah, makes total sense. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, you spoke recently at the 4th Annual International Crisis Management Conference and did a great job, by the way. We had some great feedback from your presentation, so we appreciate that. Lots of energy from you, Molly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you made, obviously, several references to various different current crises that are going on within the corporate space. Are there any, you know, if you could just, for the audience here on our podcast, talk about a few of the current cases where corporations haven't done really a good job in communicating, which, you know, seems to be, you know, the flavor of the moment in when every crisis unfolds is always that communication piece that seems to be missing or certainly lacking in terms of doing a good job in communicating with all their stakeholders. Are there a couple of cases that stand out to you currently?
Well, one case is a personal brand. It's a person, but it's a person that represents a multimedia business. And the one that I'm focusing on this week, because I'm recording my podcast and using this as a case study, and that is Tony Robbins. So Tony Robbins is a brand, but he's also a big business. And he sells seminars and he sells
yes.
products.
Yep. So very familiar with
any
him. Yep.
Organization. Yep. So any organization can look to him, either like you could be a leader of an organization. So he's the leader of his brand. So he's going through the 2018 crisis, which is the hangover from the Me Too movement. And he was originally a part of that 2018 movement. You know, he was Me Too'd. He was one of the series of men that were accused of behaving inappropriately to women.
Yep.
And he was able to kind of move through that 2018 because I think there was just so many men, primarily there were women too, that were dealing with the fallout of trying to, you know, defend some of the behavior, but mostly men were dealing with this. But he was able to get out of that. But in 2018, it set the stage, in this case for BuzzFeed News, to do a story about him that they've been working on for a year. That story broke within the last week of the time of this recording. And I have been watching his response because crisis response really is changing with how people – it's constantly evolving. It's a very dynamic type of plan, like how do you respond? Tony Robbins did something very interesting. One, he was ready for it. He obviously knew in advance, far in advance, that this story was coming, and he was ready. So as soon as BuzzFeed dropped their bombshell story about him, he immediately did something that I think is actually a very good tactic. He went to Medium.com. And he wrote a response, his response. It was a 5-minute read. Mm-hmm. And he not only wrote the response, he included that multimedia element. He included video from his supporters. He included links to videos of people that were contacted by BuzzFeed, where they felt that BuzzFeed was being inappropriate and how they were approaching their approaches for telling the story. He felt they weren't being honest, and that BuzzFeed was acting as a bully. So he was ready, but he wasn't prepared enough because I don't feel that he knew that BuzzFeed was coming out with two more parts to the story.
Mm-hmm.
So he put all of his forces into that, you know, into that one response. And then BuzzFeed came out with, you know, another video of accusations. And then a third part, it was a video from the 80s where it was uncovered that he was using racial remarks and very sensitive ones. And he really didn't have a response, and his only response was the legal one. Now you ask, what was the mistake? And Tony Robbins made the same mistake that a number of people and organizations make, and that is, for step one, I tell people in crisis command, in crisis management, crisis communication, you either need to accept, acknowledge, or apologize for your role. Tony Robbins avoided all three. He wasn't going to accept that he did anything wrong. He didn't want to even acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
And he sure as heck wasn't going to apologize for anything. When you overstep that and you hurdle over that, it makes it really, really difficult for you to have solid footing for your type of response. So that's why when BuzzFeed came out with that third story, the only thing he could do is send a response from his lawyer, because that's all he had left in his arsenal.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that seems to have caught a lot of individuals out, but obviously there's a big connection to the business world. We've got lots of businesses as well, I'm sure, and is very mm-hmm. certainly a very popular figure globally now as well. I notice He does a lot overseas as well as obviously in North America. Okay, on to the good though, because we, you know, we always seem to reference, you know, how organizations and in this case obviously individuals can mess things up and make things worse. But let's talk about some good instances. Have you got any examples of recent events that have played out well due to an organization's being better prepared? Not many, then.
I keep a list, you know, and I have a podcast. It's a Confident Communications podcast. And yep. Every year I compile a list of good communication tactics and bad communication tactics for the year. The bad is really, really easy. The good, I am scraping the bottom of the barrel because sometimes it is very difficult to respond to something. But I'm going to give you an example again of an initial poor response, but in the end, they started doing the right thing, which is where I think your audience can learn from this. And we've often heard of it, and they're still in the middle of this crisis. And I spoke about it at your conference, and that is Boeing. And the Boeing company right now, as many people know, they dealt with two very tragic crashes that killed over 500 lives on these planes. And they were initially considered, you know, they had a poor response because one, they didn't acknowledge it, and also problems with them being honest with pilots and other organizations in Washington. And so they definitely had a PR crisis on their hands. They clearly brought in some type of team to work with them. And what they're doing now is better. They're righting the ship, or, you know, righting the plane, I guess, in this case. And what they did is the first thing, and again, is they acknowledged it. So now they had to set a reset on the crisis management plan. It was delayed. It was a latent response, but it's one that you can still learn from. They acknowledged what they did. They acknowledged the errors that they made. And the CEO of the company, Dennis Muhlenberg, he stepped out and said, okay, I'm gonna put this on me. I'm going to be the face of the organization, the face of the company here. They created a video. It wasn't just a printed response. They did have a response online that you could read, that print media that they could take and they could pull out the information.
Yep.
They had quotes in there that were easy to share, easy to put on social. But then they supplemented it by creating a video where we got to see Muhlenberg, the CEO, firsthand talk about the mission of Boeing, where they got off their mission, what they were going to do. So he acknowledged what happened. He accepted responsibility for it. He acknowledged the sadness and the tragic nature of what had happened. And then he puts it into context to say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take plans for the future and make changes. And that's what Boeing, they're still trying, and they weren't perfect in their playbook by any means. It's but what they did in the end, how they tried to write everything. That's a good plan that crisis managers can look at now in the 21st century.
Sure. Great. Yeah. Appreciate that. One thing I've seen a couple of instances in the last few years, one that stands out is BASF, which is the German chemical giant, obviously, you know, global chemical business. They had an accident a couple of years ago now, led to a couple of deaths and big emergency response in their headquarters. It's kind of on a river in a port town in Germany. And, you know, a number of things went wrong, both from emergency response as well as the communication piece. And they now have a running website which gets updated periodically on what they've done to rectify all the lessons that came out of it. So I thought that was an interesting approach, to be, you know, a total open book in terms of, this is where we were, this is where we need to get to, and here are the steps that we're taking. And we're going to let the public know, our consumers, those that live around our communities, know that what we're doing about it. So I thought that was an interesting approach, and I've seen that a couple of times.
Well, and their approach too, what they did is something that's pulled out of a very traditional crisis preparedness playbook, is the idea of the press conference.
Sure.
And the press conference, even though we think about it along the times of the news cycle of when they have network news and local news, but the press conference now, even though that we're on a instant news 24/7 feed, it still makes sense to have a press conference that has a date and a time when the public knows that they can tune in and they can find out the latest information about what's happening. So a press conference is still key. key now in the 21st century.
Sure. What would you say to someone that's looking to get into the crisis communication world? You know, we've got a lot of folks that may already be in public relations, but may not have that crisis communication expertise, or you may be having someone that's starting out from school, university, looking to get into the crisis communication world. What would be your recommendation to someone who's looking to start out?
That's such an interesting question, because I speak to so many graduates and they ask me, they ask for help in their careers, and whether it's public relations or media, social media, but no one ever asks, well, how do you become a crisis manager? I always find that is a field that people come into because you have to have experience behind you. In order to learn how to protect or defend an individual or a company, you're going to need the experience of just having managed a crisis or had some part of it. So I think it's not an easy thing for someone without experience to get into, but taking the experience that you do have and following the examples that you and I were just speaking about, following examples that happened in the past, but pointing out and looking for the pieces that worked and the pieces that didn't work. And then that's what you can bring to an organization. I mean, obviously in public affairs, it's public affairs and emergency management,
yep.
Two areas that I have all my experience in for the most part. Public relations, public affairs people can easily work and get into crisis work, and of course emergency management as well. But I would say is don't expect to get into it right away, but put yourself in a position, whether it's a planning position, a preparedness position, or even a response position. Perhaps you're there for the cleanup. So whether you're on the ground working for an organization in the cleanup, or part of still the press, or the public affairs staff. But you definitely need that time. But if you know you want to do it now, just put yourself in a position where you can say, I had eyes on something, I saw what happened, I saw what they did, and then you need to take those lessons learned. What did they do right? What were some of the challenges that they had that they improved on from there? And then I think you can easily justify why you'd be able to be a great, employee or an asset to any organization in that area or field.
Sure. Yeah. That was good advice. Yeah. Appreciate that. Well, as you know here, excuse me, at PreparedX, we're all about crisis simulation exercises. As that's what we do day in, day out, planning a whole bunch of new ones coming up here in the next few months and throughout the rest of the fall and winter of 2019. But from your perspective, talk about tabletops or other similar rehearsal type exercises. How important are they and why, in your opinion, Molly?
I think they're so important, and I don't think enough organizations use them. And the reason is because not that they don't want them, but they may not think they apply to them. When I think of a tabletop exercise, I think back to when I worked at FEMA or even the cruise lines. We would frequently use those exercises to prepare for events. So when I was at FEMA working at headquarters, obviously it was a much larger scale exercise. We would bring in, we had like Forrest Sawyer from a former ABC News anchor and reporter. He would come in and he would broadcast. The last one I did was for a wildfire in California, and the agency would respond in real time while we were still doing the job. But I think I find that smaller organizations, smaller companies don't think that it really applies to them, and they mostly focus on having just a plan on paper. But I think bringing someone in and doing the actual exercise itself is so critical, because you can see the gaps within the organization right away before the crisis happens. Because crisis in the 21st century, it can bring down leaders, it can bring down organizations. We see it happen in my job. I see it happen almost every single week. But if you're prepared, it's the organizations and the leaders who know that preparedness is critical and necessary, then looking to use a tabletop exercise, no matter the size of your organization.
Perfect.
Critical for you kind of surviving.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Perfect. Well, that was, tremendous way to end the podcast here. We really appreciate your time. Any final words of wisdom for the listeners, Molly, before you leave? And if you could, please just provide your details if the folks listening would like to know more about Molly.
Oh, of course. Thanks, Rob. Yeah, what kind of public relations person would I be if I didn't mention what I do? As I mentioned earlier, I do have a podcast, the Confident Communications Podcast,
yep.
which, thank you, you were so nice and generous to be a guest on that podcast as well. I also do, I also speak for organizations, a lot of their meetings, about this idea of being a 21st century leader, trying to be an indestructible leader. So I do work with organizations, speaking at annual meetings and conferences, but also I am creating a subscription service now to help these type of leaders become more comfortable in that 21st century space, because I find that there is a fear in learning how to do it in the open market. People, leaders don't like to say, I don't know how to use social media, or I don't know what this means. So I'm creating online tutorials and online webinars and trainings that leaders can learn from the comfort of their home and office. And that's going to be launching soon on my website, which is mollymcpherson.com.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we'll add your various links into the show notes here from today's podcast. So again, thank you for your time today, Molly, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Rob.
Take care. Well, that's it for episode 60 and my interview with Molly McPherson. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, can you please rate us on iTunes or any of the other outlets where you are listening to this? We'd really appreciate it. If you're listening to this via our website and you want to leave a comment, please do. There's a space at the bottom of the podcast. We'd love your feedback on this. And again, please rate us on any of the podcast outlets where you're listening to this. Thank you. And until next time, goodbye.